Coming up on Tech News Today, Sprint got this close to buying another telco. We'll tell you which one. Also, ProView's still doing its fight. I do not hate Path, and I'll explain why. And Motorola has stopped email in Germany, sort of. All that and more coming up.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Tech News Today is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Tech News Today for Friday, February 24th, 2012. Tech News Today is brought to you by GoToMeeting. Get better connected to the people you depend on for success. For your free 30-day trial, visit GoToMeeting.com and use the promo code TNT. Welcome to Tech News Today. I'm Tom Merritt.
I'm Sarah Lane.
I'm Aya Zaktar.
I'm Darren Kitchen.
And I'm Jason Howell.
And we are so pleased to be with you on a Friday to wrap up your week of tech news with a story about Sprint.
Hooray!
It still exists, right?
Yeah, well,
hey, come
yeah.
on now.
Absolutely. No, Sprint more than exists. They almost bought MetroPCS. According to David Faber, who works for CNBC, Sprint was hours away from buying MetroPCS for $8 billion. Dan Hesse had signed off. He's the CEO of Sprint. And we didn't get approval of the board, so they backed out.
And Faber also put a second tweet out saying that the board went against their CEO, and he wonders if that means anything for Hesse's job security. I mean, Hesse's been in all those ads. We've seen that. But he could be just trying to promote his the Faber report. CNBC.
Yeah, right. Exactly. That's jumping ahead of the facts of the story.
But. Now, am I right in assuming that MetroPCS is a Sprint MVNO?
No. MetroPCS is actually the fifth largest carrier. Is that right? So they're not an MVNO.
They are not. Okay, thanks for clearing that up for me.
No, it's a good question. We had the same question.
I just kind of assumed
because
they were.
Boost and Virgin are both on Sprint's network as MVNOs, but not MetroPCS.
And Ting.
Oh, yeah, Ting.
Also, ProView, you know ProView. They're the folks fighting in China over the trademark to the term iPad.
Yes.
They keep saying, please settle out of court. We need the money,
We want $2 billion and we'll go away.
Apple they're trying to build these stoves called iPad. That's a different story.
Apple says, I know we have a mountain of cash, like literally a mountain of cash, but we're not going to settle with you. And according to Reuters, ProView filed a lawsuit in the Superior Court of the State of California in Santa Clara County against Apple's use of the trademark of iPad. So now they've brought the fight to the United States.
Well, they're arguing about what? It's fraud, though. That's the actual cause of action here.
Right. They filed the suit on February 17th, according to All Things D. That's the same day that Lee Su, chairman of Hedgen Vanguard Group, that's one of the companies representing ProView's creditors, said it was selecting American law firms. Apparently, they didn't need a law firm to file the suit. And they accuse Apple of fraud for using its IP application development subsidiary, which they created simply to buy the trademark iPad. They say, look, if we had known that it was Apple buying this, we wouldn't have sold it for the equivalent of $55,000. We would have sold it for a lot more because we know Apple's going to make tons of money off this. That's oppression, fraud, and or malice.
Well, so now they're at $2 billion.
The lawsuits that have been filed in China thus far all center around the fact that Apple does not own the name iPad in China, according to ProView.
Right.
But
they do in Taiwan.
Well, sure. ProView says that deal doesn't count.
Yeah, they
that was the Taiwanese deal.
Yeah.
This is the China deal.
Correct.
Forget
However,
it, Apple. It's
the
China.
Case be the, this new lawsuit that was filed in Santa Clara County was filed because is that the only place that they can go after Apple in the U.S. because that's where Apple's located?
Well, it was shut down in China.
Well, in California, the thing is that there's jurisdiction on Apple because Apple's located in California. And they're not suing over the trademark rights here. They're suing on a fraud case.
Right.
So the reason why they could sue in China over trademark is because ProView claims they have the trademark there. And they can also sue Apple for other things because Apple's located in California. So it's just jurisdiction.
Mm. And I think it's ProView essentially trying to cause more harassment. Harassment has a legal implication, so I shouldn't use that word. Cause more trouble for Apple so that Apple might be more willing to settle this out of court.
For this to have happened, it seems pretty clear that Apple has not come to them with any sort of a settlement deal.
No.
Or
and
at
Apple
least not anything
not
that yeah, not anything that, that ProView would deem acceptable. Now, knowing that ProView is out of money, they've got creditors who want to regain as much as possible, they're willing to settle out of court. to go this far to bring another lawsuit to the United States and hire an American law firm and the whole thing. I mean, they are really going guns blazing.
Yeah. They're basically betting the farm.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder if this argument can even work. I mean, this sounds like something you would try on, like, when Disney was buying all of Florida up for Disney World. They're like, oh, we're going to set up a subsidiary corporation. So you know it's not Disney. You're not going to rake us over the coals for money. You're going to sell us at a fair market value. And back, when did they sell this off? ProView sold this off years ago when the iPad name was pretty much worthless. Mm-hmm. And ProView's device was an all-in-one, what appeared to be a knockoff of the iMac, actually, which is a strange thing. They only produced it for a couple of years. So, I mean, if ProView can get away with this, I'd be really surprised, other than they're just annoying.
I mean, isn't that standard fare? I mean, that's how it's done. I mean, you mentioned the Disney thing. The Rockefellers did the same thing in Colonial Williamsburg.
Yeah, well, the question is, if I know that it's Apple, I suspect that this name must be worth more because Apple does good things. But is it against the law for Apple to not tell you it's Apple?
To hide that fact, yeah. Right.
And that's what will be played out in court here. Motorola now enforcing an injunction against Apple's iCloud push email notifications. That means that if you're in Germany, you won't get your emails pushed down to your iPhone anymore or any other Apple device. Apple holds the patent to be invalid. Of course, they're going to appeal. But for now, consumers have to return to those ancient days of, I don't know, 2009 or so, where you had to set your iPhone to check for mail every 2 minutes or so.
Are you saying pull instead of push?
Exactly what I'm saying.
2 minutes? That's going to drain your battery, Tom.
How will the Germans live?
2 minutes in the past.
The Dark Ages.
Yeah, exactly. It's just annoying. It's not fatal. And in fact, the patent at issue relates to a pager design that Motorola Mobility happens to have a patent on.
Actually, the most upsetting thing I read about this is that it's not a FRAND licensing thing. So basically, Motorola isn't legally required to license this to them
because
at all.
Because it's not
essential. Neener, neener, neener.
Because I can still operate my iPhone and get email without this patent.
Yeah.
And therefore, it's not FRAND. It's not essential to the operation.
What cracked me up about, I think Ars Technica had a piece like, well, Apple's kind of out of luck. It's like, no, they can just license this. I mean, they can negotiate with Motorola and say, look, you know what, fine, you know that, even if it's valid, we're going to pay you money because we'd like to have push.
Yeah, but the whole point is that Apple doesn't want to pay the amount of money Motorola is asking.
Of course.
For.
But I'm saying, like, it doesn't mean that Apple could never have this technology again. It just means that if this thing is valid.
They can, just using a different
Motorola could
mechanism.
Say.
That's true.
Screw you. We'll never sell this to you.
If Apple wants it bad enough, they could go get it.
Am I wrong in just thinking they just need to change the technical way that they go about the whole process and still do it?
You're not wrong.
Okay, yeah.
You're not wrong. That may be easier said than done, but you're not wrong.
Yeah. I mean, like, I mean, I'm no developer, but, you know, there are
actually,
mechanisms.
You kind of are.
Okay, I kind of
sometimes.
I play one on TV.
Yeah.
But, yeah, anyway, I just assume that a technical workaround will come around that's not check every 2 minutes.
And that's certainly possible.
Yeah.
Pew Internet and American Life has an interesting study out. They always have interesting studies about. And this one is about how we're all less friendly now.
Yeah, well, okay, so you could read it that way. This was a phone survey conducted last year of almost 2,300 adults that had some interesting findings for people who spend time on social networks. 44% of all respondents said, yeah, we delete comments from our social network profiles. You know, by the way, the study never actually named Facebook. They're talking about all sorts of social networking systems, but I mean, even if Google Plus was around when this was conducted,
Facebook,
you know,
at least
Facebook
in the United States and
wide,
several other countries, is the big one.
The biggest social network that I read Facebook when I'm reading these percentages.
They're like MySpace in 2005.
Right. Exactly.
In so many ways.
So yeah, up from a number of 36%. So it climbed almost 10% of people who are actively deleting things off of profiles that they think are harassing or unsavory or annoying, or they don't know them. And now, as far as the gender divide goes, 67% of women say, my profiles are friends only. I do not want strangers contacting me. Men, only 48%. So one could say, well, maybe women are just better at keeping their profiles locked down.
Men are just friendlier.
Men are just friendlier. Women are very rude and standoffish.
That was not in the study.
Well, women probably have more of a reason to get weirded out.
To be careful.
There's harassment issues, that sort of thing. As far as teenagers go, and by the way, the data about teenagers came from a separate phone survey, because obviously adults knowing what teens do doesn't actually work that well. The survey was teenagers and their parents. Teens said that... Ooh, where am I?
15% of social network users aged 18 to 29 said that they've posted things they regret.
Yes.
Only 5% of people over 50. So that's triple.
Those are right. Both low.
Well, those are actually still adults, just younger adults. Younger adults have said, yeah, I've said something that I regretted. 62% of teens. I have so many numbers here that
they all started to
look the same. And 58% of adults restricted access to friends only. So... One, you read about teens doing silly things on social networks. They're trying to make their way in the world. They're being too open. But this study says actually teens are better at locking stuff down with just their friends based on numbers alone than their older counterparts.
I was most interested in the numbers of things that people posted that they regretted, male to female. Like, okay, around the room, because we've got a great divide here. Anybody ever post anything they regret?
Well, yeah.
Yes.
Okay, well, yeah, all of us dudes, but not Sarah. Because
you've never posted
that,
anything you're like, eh, I wish I hadn't posted
that.
No, they found
that
15% of males posted stuff they regretted, while only 8% of females did, of which Sarah is not one of those
15%
8%.
Of me wishes I hadn't posted it.
15%.
8% of Sarah wishes she hadn't posted.
Gotcha.
The thing she regrets.
The overarching feeling that you get from the survey when you read all these numbers, and it's a lot of percentages, and of course there's, you know, some margin of error with any phone study, is people are getting savvier about social networks. They're, you know, they've got social fatigue with too many friends. They're deleting people from their friend lists. They're deleting comments. They're locking down their privacy options, yada, yada. I think that's part of it, but it also has to do with the fact that just more people are using these same social networks now than they were a few years ago. And something like Facebook, for my public posts, is half me deleting stuff that's either spam or it's in a language I can't read or for whatever reason just doesn't contribute to the conversation because of the sheer number of people.
Well, yeah, but also we're talking about a spread of like 2009 to 2011. And in that time, Facebook has also like sold out your privacy umpteen times, and there's been numerous hoopla about it. So,
well, and
I think that's what...
That said, though, only 2% of these users polled said that they think privacy controls are difficult to manage. Pretty much everyone said, no, they're not that difficult.
I think that merely raises the question of why we are so concerned about privacy that, and when we weren't before. I think Facebook deservedly gets criticized sometimes, but also irrationally gets criticized sometimes. My theory is that we are learning how to do this.
Well, yeah, we're new at this.
We've never done this kind of social networking before. We've done social networking in person for centuries, right? But we've never done it this way, where we had access to almost the entire world. It's fraught with different risks and different behaviors that we are now working through. Like, oh, I shouldn't follow everyone who invites me. Oh, I shouldn't have posted that picture. And we're sort of learning the rules of the game. So it doesn't surprise me that we're like starting to cut back because that's an example of us going, okay, I went in and I just did a bunch of stuff and now I need to figure out.
Now it's all like the virtual talk to the hand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. We're just pulling back a little.
That's why... social networks like Path are doing well.
Because you get a new start.
Only 50 friends? This is kind of cool. I can say whatever. I just did that this morning.
150 friends now, isn't it, Path?
Yeah, I only have...
Oh, that's right. I went off on something I would never say in public, so I'm not going to tell you now.
Well, sorry. I didn't mean to call you out, but I liked that.
Going back to Tom's point, I mean, the fact is this is so mature now, and there aren't, like Darren's point, this is so on the news, and people are like, it's Facebook screwing this thing, and you're like, oh, what's going on? What's going on in the privacy controls? One of the stats I noticed was apparently higher educated people had trouble with the privacy controls more so than lower educated people.
And because I thought about them more.
I think the thing is, like, it just shows you how...
We're overthinking it.
Yeah. We're like, it should be difficult. It's like, maybe they're more intuitive than we thought. I don't know. But
conspiracy theory.
Yeah, it's a new world and people are getting used to it.
I'm looking up Isaac's Path thing. Hold on.
Yeah,
oh, wait. I didn't quit Path.
Quit Path?
No. He's just making stuff up. I didn't quit that.
I just don't use it anymore. I didn't quit. I just don't show up.
That's not even true either. You're putting words in my mouth.
Yeah,
I don't use Path
and
all that.
I'll put it on Path that I said that.
Fine. Screw you, Path. I will never go back to you. I just don't use it that much anymore. That's all. I love Path.
Path told me it missed you.
Yeah, I'll go back.
All right.
I posted a picture last night. Today's Tech News Today is brought to you by GoToMeeting. We sometimes trust people, But we trust people more when we can look them in the eye and show them what we mean. And that's what GoToMeeting with HD Faces does by Citrix. It can be tough in business if you're just talking to somebody on the phone. You don't get those verbal cues. You don't get to see what they're pointing at, see what they're talking, see those expressions. With GoToMeeting, all you need is a webcam and a click. Can you click? I think you can click. And you got a webcam, you're ready to go with HD video. You can see attendees eye to eye collaborating on documents in real time. It helps build trust. It helps build confidence. It makes meetings more effective. And it's so easy. I mean, it's GoToMeeting. It's easy to set up and use. You know that. Video quality is clear and natural. It's pretty much like being in the same room. Available for Mac or PC, and you can use it for whatever you want. You got product review, you got a sales presentation, you need to like go over some documents, whatever it is, training sessions, start hosting your own face-to-face online meetings today with GoToMeeting. You don't have to take our words for it. You can do it for free. Try it out for 30 days, absolutely free. Visit GoToMeeting.com. That's GoToMeeting.com. Click on the Try It Free button and enter the promo code TNT. That's the important part. GoToMeeting.com. That promo code is TNT, and you'll get to try it out for 30 days for free. And we thank Citrix and GoToMeeting for their support of Tech News Today. On to the Microsoft segment.
Oh, yay.
It's like a sieve over there. They're just leaking stuff out right and left.
Sort of. So Microsoft, we already know that Microsoft announced that Office is going to be on Windows on ARM. And the question is,
Four apps. We're talking about Excel, Word, PowerPoint, and OneNote here. That's not Office.
Yeah, it's
they announced it as Office anyway. So let's go with Microsoft's words on this one. And the thing is, everyone knows that they're not Metro apps. These are the desktop applications. So people are wondering, how is that going to work on ARM-based tablets and things? Well, Mary Jo Foley reports that Office 15 will offer a touch mode button. Now, she has an image of the technical preview. It was sent to her by one of her contacts, who remains anonymous. And the technical preview matches images that were on The Verge. So the button currently doesn't actually function. So we don't know exactly how that's going to work. Microsoft's intention apparently is to enable Office UI to switch to something more touch-friendly when you're using the Office 15 apps. So the idea is, a lot of people are like, okay, how am I going to use something so intensive, like a keyboard-intensive program, like something like Word, or I want to see these options like cut and paste and all these other things. How is that going to work?
We actually got emails from people complaining about the OnLive thing, saying, I don't want Office through OnLive on my iPad. That interface is going to be horrible.
Exactly. So the question is, how is this going to break down? And it looks like there's going to be a secondary interface once you click that button. Right now, we don't know what it does yet. And I'm just assuming that icons will get larger. And then one of the funnier things is, in the actual image, the touch mode button is kind of tiny. So yeah, hopefully
that might
it's just
not be the final design, right, but that is sort of like, I'm going to need a very tiny finger.
Or a stylus.
Yeah. See, no, your app can't be on the you know, ARM-based tablets, but these four Microsoft...
Your app can be on the ARM-based tablet. It just has to be developed for Metro.
Oh, right. Okay, so break out your JavaScript and your HTML.
You just have to have a goatee and wear skinny jeans and be all Metro. And then you can have your app on the
I don't think you understand what
but
Metro
these,
means.
But these are Microsoft anointed apps.
That's not Metro.
That have been given the...
Hipsters don't have goatees.
Bestowed upon the great honor of being able to run Metro, even though they're desktop apps. So what's up with that, Microsoft?
Yeah, what's up with that, Microsoft?
Yeah, that's what I
What's
up feel.
With what now?
It's like, huh?
I was too busy trying to figure out if my description of a Metro
was hipster or not. Actually, but the thing is, these desktop applications are going to be the real desktop applications. They're supposed to be able to.
Yes, but then they're going to have a different face when they're in Metro land because
they're not Metro. That's the thing. They're technically not Metro.
Okay, but they're going to have a different face on the
All of Office 15 is going to be
desktop. Yeah,
so it'll be consistent.
That's true.
That's Microsoft's big UI right now. No, you can switch it.
Oh yeah,
but you can wear a scarf.
You're confusing me.
Well, now, is the scarf like a ribbon? Because I know the Office...
There's a sort of ribbon on the bottom
now. In Metro,
now,
it'll be
text.
Called the scarf.
Oh, I see. That makes sense.
In the desktop, it'll be called the ribbon.
And you can get it in plaid.
Yes.
That's what I wanted to know.
Absolutely.
All I'm saying is, these ARM-based guys come out, and it's like, oh, your app has to be HTML5 and, you know, JavaScript and all that fun stuff, right?
But
and then, meanwhile, oh, hey, GCC, compile with the make, install, configure, and then, boom, it's done on Linux.
It's a good point.
Not the four anointed ones.
I think that we should circle back to give Microsoft credit that everybody was wondering, how is Office going to work on a tablet?
Now they're trying to figure it out.
And this seems to be the indication of how
because a lot of the things, I think this actually goes back to the way Windows 8 is designed. And people are like, how am I going to use that start screen with my mouse? That seems ridiculous. It's the big tiles and everything. They were saying with Windows 8, it's touch first. Looks like with Office 15, it's touch second. It was push that button.
Yeah. So we still don't know, right? We still don't know what Office 15 will look like in its Metro version.
Well, it's not Metro.
Well, it's what is it
Windows
called?
Windows on
touch
ARM?
Touch version.
It's, no, not Windows, Windows on ARM. It's,
oh,
it's
the touch.
Tablet. It's
oh, the touch,
the
touch mode. Yes.
Right.
I know. Windows for pen computing. It will never fail.
Windows with hair gel.
Yes. With an ascot.
Apple has acquired Chomp.
Did
Yay!
You,
did you hear about this? I heard about this.
Oh, did I hear about
did
this?
Did you hear about this?
Sure did.
I bet you did.
Sure did. Actually, this is really... Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, no, go ahead.
I'm just really excited because for a while now, I have felt that the App Store and really iTunes in general just needed a huge overhaul. The App Store is... I mean, I spend a lot of time looking for apps for various shows on this network, but certainly for iPad Today. If I know what something's called, that's easy enough. Or I can look at what the iTunes Store has featured, new and noteworthy, or editor's choices. That's all fine and good, but there's no way that they can even cover everything. And in many cases, the new and noteworthy section of the App Store on iTunes is just new stuff. It doesn't end up being like the coolest stuff.
And that has always been the problem when I want to go to the iOS App Store and say, you know, I just want a cool puzzle game.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And there's a games category.
You have 2,300
choices.
It's
really hard to narrow down to the kind of game I'm looking for. Chomp is really good at being able to narrow down by the way the app works.
Right.
It's a third-party app. You can download an iOS right now. And TechCrunch reported yesterday afternoon, and Apple has now confirmed it, that Chomp search has been acquired by Apple. And in fact, 9to5 Mac cite sources claiming that Chomp CEO Ben Keegren, is it Keegren? And CTO mm-hmm. Kathy Edwards are already working at Apple to help with an upcoming revamp of iTunes. This is more than just an hire. They've actually brought the entire Chomp team into Apple, and they will be working on remodeling the App Store.
Well, that's awesome. I mean,
I'm
you
excited.
Know that Chomp already integrates with social networks like Twitter and Facebook to allow you to get better recommendations. Now it's with Apple. We can see it finally come to Ping, as I'm sure everybody's been waiting for.
Mm.
You know, what the other weird thing about this is Chomp does Android apps.
Yeah, I was just about to say, I wonder what happens to the Android app at this point.
And in fact, it has a deal with Verizon to be sort of Verizon's default, like, here's how to find the great Android apps. Now it's owned by Apple.
I don't see that. Yeah, I don't.
I don't know how that contract looks.
Remaining.
I essentially think that that partnership remains as long as the contract stipulates that it has to remain, and that's it.
Yeah.
Well, it seems like, I mean, the thing is with the App Store, it kind of grew into this monstrously large thing, very difficult to use. And the thing is, the Android market got a huge overhaul recently, so that made it easier to find things. And this is just like, if you have enough applications, and actually the whole iTunes Store itself is kind of way too large because there's music, there's movies, there's all kinds of things.
It's still called
there.
iTunes,
right?
And there are all sorts of things.
And there's books in there.
Got
a
better name?
iTunes
related.
U, and there's all kinds of things.
Oh,
so,
you know, I think the worst is Newsstand.
Yeah, that's the issue.
You go into Newsstand, and first of all, you don't realize the first time you go in that it's just the App Store, except you're in a separate section. So if you go into categories, suddenly you're in the App Store categories, and you're looking at games. You're not looking at Newsstand categories.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's not,
you have to know what you're looking for.
Shown in the front page of Newsstand, you cannot find it unless you know exactly what it is.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. It's annoying.
And so hopefully Chomp will help solve that as well. Finally, let's finish up with some rumor mill. Couple of good Google rumors out there. The Google Operating System blog reports the upcoming Google Drive release will add support for third-party apps. And the source code seems to indicate that they'll include an SDK for developers. In fact, source code says that SDK is mentioned several times. There's a quote commented out that says, "Say goodbye to email attachments and hello to real-time collaboration. Drag anything shared with you to My Drive for easy access." So it might be called My Drive. But the idea is that you will be able to have your apps work in the drive as if sort of a quasi-Google operating system.
I love it.
I love it, too.
I no longer care about this story.
Oh, come
Why
on.
Not?
It's awesome.
It's been around for 5 years.
So, well, okay,
put out the stupid drive already.
It makes sense that it's been around for 5 years because there's a lot of very important things you've got to figure out.
I'm just tired of the story. And when it actually...
No. Dropbox, easy thing to do. You know, rsync, some plugins, make a pretty web UI, write a client for
and
all the major
now.
OSs, and you're done, right? Google, dude, I got to give them props because the
SDK... Give them props
for what now?
For making us keep talk about this thing we
that
can't
we
have.
No, but source code?
If this rumor is true about an SDK and, like, say, my ability to, like, I don't know, on my website, like hack5.org, I could, like, have it integrate with your Google Docs so that we can, I don't know, check them for viruses. I don't know what we'd do. But the fact that there could be, if this rumor is true, that there's an SDK, means that very big and complex problems like figuring out authentication cross sites has been taken care of. And I kind of trust Google to have, because it's really important that that when you start allowing those third parties in, that you make sure it's uber secure, because we're talking about our Gmail accounts here, people.
And the brilliance of it is web apps from the Chrome store now can store to your G Drive.
It's huge.
Instead of having to store locally.
This theoretical awesome thing.
So your saved games, your et cetera. I know,
it's
you don't
still the theoretical issue. No, no. It's not that
rumor,
I don't believe.
You've got rumor fatigue.
We just start, we started with Rumor Mill. It's actually the segment title.
What about this rumor?
Let's go for it.
CNET, speaking with display search analyst Richard Shim, reports that the Google Slate will enter production in April. Now, we've only been hearing this since Eric Schmidt said, we're going to have a tablet. It's going to come out by the summer. You're going to love it, or something like that.
we're going to market a tablet.
It doesn't really talk like that. But it will, according to Shim, it's going to be a $1.5 to $2 million run of units, so there are going to be a bunch of them out there.
Unit run.
Previous rumors, what's that?
Unit run, not dollar run.
You said dollars.
Right. Yeah. Did I say
dollar? Each unit will cost $1.5
million.
$1.5 million.
No, they're going to make 1.5 to 2 million of them. And previous rumors have said it would be a 7-inch tablet, a Nexus branded device running Ice Cream Sandwich. It would be around $199, compete with the Kindle Fire. Shim seemed to say, like, that all sounds right, too. He also said it would feature a high resolution display, 1280 by 800, and that would put it above the Kindle Fire, at least on resolution. But it would be Google getting into making hardware, which is kind of weird.
Do you really think they'd be making it themselves?
Well, no, they obviously would. No, I mean, no more than Apple makes the iPhone, right? That Foxconn makes it. But Google's going to have somebody make it, assemble it,
and then call it Nexus.
According to Shim, it's going to come out as a Google product.
Okay, because how is that? Well, okay, then. Well, that's the only difference that it is than in the past.
Instead of a Motorola or Samsung.
Or a Logitech Google TV.
Yeah.
Well, I trust them not to mess it up.
Head-to-head with Amazon, good luck.
Actually, if it is messed up, there's no excuse, because you don't have the, they implemented Ice Cream Sandwich wrong kind of thing.
They
you know?
Need a Nexus tablet. They really need something that, look, this is what the reference design is. This is what a pure experience is. It wasn't mocked up by somebody else's UI. It didn't have TouchWiz. It wasn't tweaked. Or the excuses of, they didn't do it right. They should have something that says, look, this is our showcase piece, and this is what the standard should be. For Google to go into consumer electronics and sell it directly, I don't think that's so crazy anymore. I think they could do it because people are willing to buy tablets that are Wi-Fi only. There's no carriers to deal with like the Nexus phones. This is simply buy a tablet straight out from Google, and maybe there could be a 3G version and all that LTE version.
You just put a GSM like modem in it with a SIM card slot and you say, have fun, users.
Guess who has a bigger ecosystem than Barnes & Noble, too? Don't forget. Google has video relationships through YouTube. Mm-hmm. Google has a books shop that's huge. It's bigger than Barnes & Noble. So it may not be.
So you're saying this is a Kindle killer?
I think it could be
a serious competitor.
I just wonder if you could just use the Amazon App Store on there.
Google has a music
Amazon
shop.
Probably just wants to sell content anyway, so why not just put it on?
Well, you
flash things on.
Yeah, on Android.
On Android anyway.
Right now.
They
could be the best of all worlds for the consumer, because you get everything Android. Instead of the Kindle, which is restricted. I mean, you can get around it, but it is essentially restricted to Amazon. Let's move on to the news piece now, shall we? Hold on while I play Defender.
And die.
And I died.
In the game.
Google just released a new Chrome extension. This is not a rumor. It's called Keep My Opt-Outs, which will stop advertisers from tracking you while you browse the web. This goes along with yesterday's announcement. Google says, as other companies adopt privacy standards, the extensions will be updated to reflect that Google warns that if you install the extension, quote, you may see the same ads repeatedly or see ads that are less relevant to you.
Because you're asking for it.
You don't want us to track you. You're going to get punched the monkey.
It's like Hulu Plus ads. You get fewer of them, but it's the same ad over and over, and you might really hate it.
Can I just say Control-Shift-N and button, Tor button? Yeah, Google Tor button for Chrome. Putting out there.
Speaking of Google, Google's selling its share of Clearwire. That's the wireless broadband company. Google bought 6.5% of Clearwire back in 2008 for $500 million and will be selling its entire share for, wait for it, $47 million.
It's the worst
flip
ever.
That's a big loss. Yeah, that's a bad flip. I just need to watch more HGTV. The sale of the stock will start on February 27.
AT&T just lost a whopping $850 to Matt Spetarelli in California. Now, Spetarelli successfully sued AT&T for throttling speeds on his iPhone 4S's unlimited data
plan. Successfully.
Successfully, that's right. His argument was he'd only used 1.5 to 2 gigabytes in a billing cycle, while AT&T does offer a 3 gigabyte data cap to tiered subscribers. Now, he didn't run into AT&T's arbitration clause because he wasn't suing in a jury trial or a class action. No word on whether AT&T will appeal.
So essentially, because he won in a small claims court, everybody who ever gets threatened with being throttled or gets throttled by AT&T can go to a small claims court. It's a little bit of a hassle, right? It's the time, but it doesn't cost you that much.
Yeah, it's pretty cheap. I think I was doing some research of something like $30 or something, or like $15 per defendant or something silly like that.
And all of a sudden, AT&T is going to wish they allowed class action suits because they're going to have to be sending out lawyers after potentially thousands.
Well, that's what happens with those little class
cases.
They don't show up and then you win by default because it's not worth it for them. Anyway, yes, do that. iMore.com reports Apple is going to ditch the 30-pin dock connector for a smaller version to free up space for more internal components, like, you know, those radios and batteries that we all love. iMore.com points out Apple's history of, you know, shrinking things like micro SIM cards or jumping over to Thunderbolt for connectivity. So it's kind of not outside of the realm of possibilities. But who's with me on betting it's not going to be micro USB, sadly?
Standards. No standards.
Yeah. Even though the EU would want it to be, they'll just come out with a dongle.
Bad news for Rim fans. Netflix announced via Twitter that it has no current plans to support BlackBerry devices, including the Playbook. Netflix does have apps for iOS, Windows Phone, and Android. I don't know. Maybe if enough people complain, Netflix will change their mind. Or they could use Rim's kit to port the Android app over, but it sounds like Netflix just doesn't care.
Or Netflix could make it HTML5 and just drop the DRM.
That will never happen.
Mm-mm.
I know.
Not for a lot.
I can hope.
Dream on.
I'm dreaming.
The 11th Circuit Court of Appeals has ruled that a defendant can't be forced to decrypt a drive if the contents are not known on Fifth Amendment grounds. Entering a password would count as testimony. The legal landscape on this matter is mixed with other courts in the U.S., ruling no Fifth Amendment protection. The Supreme Court has yet to make a definitive ruling, but if you want a more in-depth discussion, definitely check out this Friday's This Week in Law, because they talk about it and they really break it down.
Also, Google TrueCrypt hidden volumes. It's good stuff.
Extreme Tech reports Mozilla will show off its mobile OS Boot to Gecko in partnership with LG. The two companies will also introduce a device for developers. Now, Mozilla CTO, mentioned
you're
that...
cut off.
Yeah, so
you're drinking water.
My water there. Mozilla CTO mentioned that the company will be at Mobile World Congress with partners, plural, so it might be more than LG. Maybe Motorola. Maybe I misspoke.
Yeah, maybe that was a fortuitous slip.
It may be a small pond, but Nokia is now officially the big fish in it. According to strategic analysis, the Finnish company finished the number one Windows phone maker on the planet after just one quarter. So Nokia moved 2.7 million units in the fourth quarter of 2011. The losers, Windows Phone, in the Windows Phone market, yeah, that's HTC and Samsung.
They're the minnows.
Aww.
Docomo, Fujitsu, NEC, and Panasonic are getting together to put out a new cellular modem that can handle, get this, LTE, HSPA+, WDCMA, WCDMA?
CDMA.
Yeah, that's a typo. WCDMA and GSM, all on the same chip. The single chip design will also allow for better battery life, and the companies say to expect up to 20% better power efficiency. The chip has already been tested and may be in devices soon. So it's not like devices haven't been able to do all of these together, but they had to do separate chips. Now they can put them all in one.
One SKU.
Small, tiny.
I like
put
that
it in
idea.
Your ear. Uh-oh. Let's move on to the randomizer.
Randomizer.
NASA wants to pay you to eat space food.
Woohoo!
Hey, I don't hear the downside yet.
Dude, save on groceries if they're going to be providing the food.
Yeah, exactly. They want to test out, what did they call it?
Instant dry foods. And they want to make sure that you don't have... they want to
meal
gauge,
fatigue or something?
Gauge if the participants can avoid menu fatigue.
Menu fatigue. Mm. So this isn't astronaut ice cream. This isn't the freeze-dried pizza that you buy in the gift shop.
Yes,
this is the actual food. All that stuff is the stuff that the Apollo astronauts ate in the 60s. Nobody eats that on the space station anymore. But they actually are, you know, they want to improve the food for astronauts. So They're trying to test it out.
I was listening to an actual report on this yesterday, and there are a couple of things that they think happens because, in general, not only is it the way that the food has to be prepared to be in space, but it's the fact that people find the food extremely tasteless. And part of it has to do with the fact that when you have zero gravity, the way that the aroma would sort of waft up to you, because, of course, smell is a big part of taste, doesn't work the same way. So there's like an absence of sense of smell. And, you know, you don't get that, like, pizza or, the spaghetti or that kind of thing. And also that actually in your cells and your molecules themselves, the zero gravity actually sort of changes the way that, you know, your face is. People kind of get rounder faces in space. They tend to kind of have more of like a head cold because
space face.
Yeah. Because stuff is traveling up where normally gravity kind of keeps it down. Your blood falls. So that also affects the inability to smell. It's fascinating.
The good news is you're going to get $5,000 if you're accepted, and they fly you to Hawaii for the test, right?
Yeah, not to mention,
that's awesome.
Not to mention cooking classes.
Yeah.
And microgravity environments.
You also have to live in a small astronaut-style enclosure with strangers with limited showers and write daily reports.
You need to have a bachelor's degree in either math, engineering, biological, or physical sciences, or computer science. And you have to be a non-smoker.
What about just a bachelor of science in journalism?
You can try it.
All right.
Go for it.
It probably doesn't pass.
Good luck.
Let's check the calendar instead.
Mobile World Congress is finally kicking off Monday, February 27th in Barcelona. There's been quite a few announcements already, but I'm sure the companies are saving some of their good stuff for next week. RSA Conference also begins next Monday, the 27th. It's going to be all week at Moscone in San Francisco. Security! Darren, you're going, aren't you?
I'll be there.
Totally be there. This is right up your alley. Microsoft is launching Windows Server 8 and Visual Studio 11 betas on February 29th. And finally, Darren, I'm going to let you tell us about this because it's super awesome.
Oh, the Hack 5 Season 11, Episode 11, that'd be 1111, which is binary for 15. So we're having a party in Point Richmond at the Baltic on May 3rd.
Excellent. I'll
tell you a billion more times, but awesome.
Hey. What is that I see?
Incoming message.
Oh, it's an incoming message. This one comes from Eric in Virginia. He says, hey guys, love TNT, watch every day. This looks like an interesting new form of e-commerce that I would love to hear your opinion on, but I think they mentioned they built it on Flash, which makes me groan with annoyance. It is, in fact, Three, one of the mobile carriers in the UK, allowing you to buy phones through them online from a shop assistant. So instead of having to just go through the website, or instead of having to go to the store to meet someone, you get the best of both worlds. You go online, and then through some sort of, you know, kind of video chat system, you get to talk to the shop assistant, and they've got this huge setup where they can like use a touchscreen to bring the phone up and show you the features of the phone. It seems like a lot of work for something that I don't think a lot of people are going to love. But maybe it's the first step towards better customer service on the web.
Well, there's a lot of those like those pop-ups that show up. And like, I noticed you've been on our site for 2 seconds. Would you like to have a chat with me? And sometimes you just want to explain, look, I want that phone over there. Can you show me that phone?
Maybe it's because, whenever I've gone into an actual cell phone shop, there's usually only one person in there that actually knows what I'm talking about. And asking for
and finding a phone that's not a dummy unit is kind of a pain too.
Yeah, exactly. None of these would ever be dummy units. They'd all be virtual.
Mm-hmm.
So they'd all work, theoretically. They'd never be stolen.
And it depends on what you're buying. I could see this working well for, you know, electronics, but not for stuff that you have to touch.
What about clothing?
That's
you just
what I mean.
Upload your body image to your webcam.
The feel of it is really important, though.
We could probably just download our image from the TSA. Don't they have that on file anyway?
Also, Ken from Chicago points out that all of those people who are working for Three are going to have Gorilla Arm within like a half a year. You're going to be able to tell them out at the pub because they're going to have these huge
Popeyes
biceps.
Huge forearms.
Gorilla Arms. You work for a virtual clothing store,
don't
Three?
You? Yeah, I thought so from your arms. All right, you got the next email.
Sorry. Tony writes in.
Thinking about gorilla arms, I know.
I'm like, ooh, that sounds cool.
Isn't that like zombie arms?
Tony writes in and says, besides Brian Brushwood's humor suggestion to wear Google glasses while driving, in order to read email, etc. There's a potential for use in them when driving that could be useful, even life-saving. Paired via Bluetooth to a capable phone, a heads-up display of the road ahead and any potential dangers would be a great help where weather or darkness hampers visibility. I watch every show. Except this Monday, which was missing without explanation on Roku.
Well,
that's weird.
We told you on Friday that we were not going to be here for President's Day. But we didn't do a show.
I remember doing it, though. What was I doing on Monday?
You were honoring the presidents spending lots of presidents.
It's been a long week. It feels like we've done
here.
Five shows. It's
Maybe
only
you
four.
Were. Maybe you did the show.
Maybe I did.
You did in your house. By
sorry, I didn't upload it, everyone. That's usually Jason's job.
Nabbit, Sarah. Our last email from Rich in lovely Cleveland. Tom and Posse. That would be, I guess we're the Posse. All right, cool. Is there any licensing restriction that would stop OnLive from creating a desktop that goes to Mac OS X instead of Windows? Apple likes to lock down their OS, but if OnLive pays for it, would it be possible? I know you can't virtualize OS X on Windows, but could you have a server running OS X setting this up? Although since you'd have to have all Apple hardware running, this might not be financially viable for OnLive. The thought is interesting to consider. Love the show. Thank you, Rich. Actually, I looked up and I found out that if you want to run a virtual machine of Lion, you have to have Lion. It has to be a minimum. And you can, I think, run one on one. So you can have like one VM on one version of Lion. So it seems
It might be pricey.
It'd be pretty expensive.
But they could do it.
Just charge you $10 per month instead of $5.
Right. I guess they could make different user accounts on one instance of Lion.
Or they could just try to negotiate flat out with Apple.
Yeah,
figure out what they can do
and
about
Apple
this.
Will be like, we don't take your calls. Sorry. We don't even know who you are.
We have a bunch of these old excerpts sitting around. It's
like you want those? We'll
nobody's buying them. We don't sell them anyway, so take them.
I say just get BusyBox and end curses. Call it a day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Less, there you go.
Less intensive.
If you don't know what he's talking about, you might want to watch Hack 5 and brush up.
Yay. HAK5.org.
And what's going on at the old Hack 5 these days?
Oh, we have a wonderful show on... We're breaking out of sandboxes, doing IP6 stuff. That's what we're doing.
Sounds awesome.
HAK5.org. Technewstoday.reddit.com is our subreddit. Now, here's the thing, folks. If you don't go in and vote, let's say you go in and submit stories. That's great. But if you don't go in and vote, we don't know what you really want to see. It's just this big flat morass of stories. So get in there and vote. Technewstoday.reddit.com. That is the place to let us know what you want us to talk about on the show. And we pay attention to it every day. We look at it and we're like, okay, it's got 12 votes. 12 out of 4,000? I don't know if that's a lot of people. So get in there and vote. TechNewsToday.reddit.com. Thanks, everybody, for watching and listening. You can find us on the web at twit.tv/TNT. You can email us. Our email address is tnt@twit.tv. You can even phone us with a telephone. Pick up your rotary dial phone and dial 260 and then the numbers that go along with TNT show. That's a convincing rotary dial
Thank
phone.
You.
I didn't realize that was actually you making
sounded like
it.
A cat purring. Yeah.
We will be back on DTMF. Monday with an all-new show. In fact, Harry McCracken from Time and the Technologizer blog joins us. We'll see you then.